Hi there, this is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. Joining me in the studio is Reverend Earl Cooperkamp, who is the pastor of the Church of the Good Shepherd Church in Barrie, and is also a member of the Vermont Interface Action Group, which is why we are here this morning. Melissa Battis, how do you
Battah.
Battah, who is the deputy director for the Vermont Interfaith Action, was supposed to join us. She'll be joining us rather late, but she is the head of this group, and both Earl is the pastor of the church I go to, and Melissa sits next to me. So it's a Barrie show. But in talking to people around town and in Montpelier and all over, that the Vermont Interfaith Action Group, was talked about a lot about helping and during the flood and really coming out full force. And this is a group that there are 50 member groups here in Vermont that in this particular, what is it, subgroup, I guess.
Correct.
They're from Vermont, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, and Vermont. And Earl, you said they're all over the United States, right?
Yes. And good morning,
good
Pat.
Good morning.
And great to be on Vermont Viewpoint. And,
thank you.
And also great to have all your listeners here. And
yeah.
And a beautiful morning here in Central
yes, it
Vermont.
Is. I'm so sorry we're not out, not in.
Exactly. Absolutely lovely. And thank you, because Good Shepherd was one of the founding members almost 18 years ago of Vermont Interfaith Action, which is an affiliate of a national organization that's known as Faith in Action. As you said, 4,050 organizations from Maine to California. Our Vermont Interfaith Action consists of 75 member and affiliated congregations from Brattleboro to Burlington, from Bennington to Barrie, all across the state. And we organize, as it says in our name, interfaith, out of our faith. We are Christian, Protestant, Catholic. We are Buddhist. We are Jewish. We are Muslim. Unitarian, out of all our different traditions, but our traditions and our faith calls us to hold some values about, your previous guest, Rachel, put it so well, about kindness, caring, listening, but also then putting those values
right
into action. And that's what we're about.
And that's what you all do. I am always amazed by our church, but also about all the other churches in the area, what they do.
Yes,
they just put their money where their mouth is, as the expression goes.
Well, that's it. It's putting, and it's about organizing and
right,
community organizing. And there's really two kinds of power that we have in this world. It's organized money and organized people. And we have the organized people in our congregations. I've been doing this for a long time, about 100 years old now, but
yeah.
I've been ordained as an Episcopal priest now for coming up this June. It's going to be 40 years.
Wow.
Getting up there in some years. But early on in my ministry, one of the things is knowing that, Sunday mornings I'm going to stand up as I do, and preach about our values, those values that come out of our faith. Specifically in the Episcopal Church, as part of the, as our presiding bishop likes to say, we're the Episcopal version of the Jesus movement. Following Jesus and what Jesus taught us, it's one thing to stand there on Sunday morning in the pulpit and tell people about it, but what are we going to do Monday morning? What are we going to do Tuesday? And Vermont Interfaith Action, our community organizing, gives us the way to put those values into action. We'll say, as Jesus told us, care for the least of these. Well, care for the homeless. Okay, that's good. And we'll pray for people who are undergoing a housing crisis on Sunday. But Monday,
right,
what we've got to do is, get out there, support the work here in central Vermont at the Good Samaritan Haven, which we do and have been doing literally, again, one of the things I love about Good Shepherd. We're one of the founding congregations of the Good Samaritan Haven.
Rick is doing Rick Frickett is
Rick
he
Angelus
is
a saint.
Yes, I had him on the show and I couldn't believe what he's done.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful, the new facilities.
It's incredible. Yeah, I'm a board member. We always make sure one of the Barry clergy stays on the board and Rick DeAngelis, who I mean, God bless him. You know, he's worked hard. He will be retiring soon. And Julie Bond, the co-director, is really stepping up. And Rick and Julie and all the staff at Good Samaritan Haven, they're doing that work. So how can our congregations both, you know, support them in the work that they're doing, but also the even bigger issue, how do we begin to prevent homelessness?
Well, there you go.
Yeah, here in central Vermont already, throughout the state, you know, we've seen the affordability crisis we had. I can't believe it, but when I saw recently, Vermont has the second highest per capita number of homeless people.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Right after
that
California.
That shocks me. Shame on us.
Absolutely shocking. And it's because our housing stock is old, expensive, and scarce. Our poverty rates are quite high. So what are we going to do about that? Governor Scott, yes, has talked about affordability, but there's also really the need to continue to build and continue to bring that voice before the state legislature, bring that voice to the executive, to really make sure that the people aren't left behind. You know, we've been working on this literally for a dozen years since I've been in Barrie. And then we had a flood.
Well, and then another one made us, like, stop.
Exactly. And so, but that didn't really change, what we had to do. That just showed, again, the real urgency of making sure that that those who are undergoing a housing crisis aren't forgotten. Mm-hmm. What do we need to do? We need to do things like, first of all, build more housing. And so we need to work with the legislature how to get the funding for that. Right. We need to make sure that that is an absolute priority because, quite frankly, homeless kids can't learn.
Right.
And
they can't speak for themselves either.
Exactly.
Right?
Homeless people have a hard time holding a job.
Right.
Because you're in such a crisis that just simply surviving day to day. So that's the sorts of values that we really want to put into action. And that's the things that we preach about, celebrate, and pray for on Sunday. Then, our Muslim friends, they're on Friday at the Juma prayers, with the Shabbat service. Our Jewish friends are, doing the same thing on Saturday. And so we take those values that we, so celebrate, the faith that is so deep that feeds our souls, then put that to work.
Right. That's really an important message. Speak your heart and what you're feeling on Sunday, but Monday, get up.
Exactly.
Get up and do something.
Yep. Yeah. In our Christian tradition, in the Epistle of James, faith without works is a dead and lifeless thing.
There you
and
go.
So we want a live faith, a living faith that, really feeds our souls, but feeds the souls of our sisters and brothers.
Well, I know the churches in the barrier, there's always something going on, and especially at Good Shepherd, one dinner after another.
Yes,
we helped Ukraine. We've given money to the Good Samaritan.
Yep. The earthquake victims in Turkey and Syria last year.
That's great. And I certainly, I heard, Melissa's on. I didn't know that.
Hi, Melissa.
She came so early. Melissa, how are you?
Good. How are you all?
Good. Oh, I'm so glad. I thought you were joining us a little later. That's great. So, can you tell, as long as you're on the air, Melissa Bata. Thank you. I'll remember eventually. But anyway, Melissa, as I said before, is the Deputy Director for the Vermont Interfaith Action. Could you talk to us a little bit, Melissa, about your job and about the Interfaith Action Coalition?
Yeah, so I have been with Vermont Interfaith Action now. Actually, next week it will be my celebration of my 13th year working with VIA. I started out as a community organizer on healthcare, and have just loved the work so much that I stuck with it, and I am now deputy director. Our executive director, Debbie Ingram, is actually retiring at the end of June, and I have been asked to step in as interim executive director while we do an ED search. So lots of changes going on, but VIA is a faith-based community organizing group. We organize around issues that are important to the congregations who are partners with us. And we organize for systemic change. So it's, you know, that we have every congregation has within its group certain ministries that they do that are service and acts of charity, right? And those are important, but we also need to be looking at the bigger picture and saying, you know, why is it that I'm going to speak now for Central Vermont, which is where I live. You know, why is it that the congregations in Central Vermont every year are asked to be warming shelters or overnight shelters for folks who are unhoused? You know, we could continue doing that year after year after year, and eventually we'll burn ourselves out. Or we can ask the bigger picture of why do we have so many unhoused folks in Central Vermont? I know I was listening to you all talking about that issue, and you know what VIA does is we have been organizing now for over a decade on trying to find solutions where folks in Central Vermont have housing, that we don't have chronic homelessness. We might have folks who are have periods of time where they are unhoused because maybe the place that they were living in got sold and they need to find another place and they can't do it quick enough. Or maybe, you know, they lose a job, or some medical bills come up that they have put them in a place where they're unable to pay rent any longer.
Right.
And so they might be unhoused for a couple of months, and that can be, you know, we're never going to solve homelessness to the sense that nobody will ever be unhoused ever again. But what we're seeing, and what has been the history in Central Vermont and across Vermont, is that there is chronic homelessness where folks, the average stay, I think at Good Samaritan Haven, Earl, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know it varies. I think the average stay is like 9 months to a year.
That's yes, correct.
You know, which is unconscionable. We should not be having folks staying in homeless shelters for that period of time.
Well, and especially I think if they have children and there's school involved, and that's just so upsetting to, I'm assuming, to the kids. Melissa, I read on your website there are just so many other issues that you get involved with. My previous guest, I don't know if you heard Rachel, was talking about religious hatred. And that's something that's on your website that we're hoping to, why are people so angry? Earl, do you, I mean, what is it? What's happening? I don't like to be angry.
No, it's not good. On the one hand, you know, we read in our Christian scriptures in Ephesians 4, where it says, be angry, but don't let the sun go down on your anger.
Exactly.
Do not sin. And yeah, anger is, it's a human emotion. You know, and to tell people don't be angry is like telling the tide not to roll in or the sun not to come up. It's going to happen.
Right, exactly.
But what do we do with that anger? A wonderful community organizer, a guy that got a MacArthur Genius Grant, his name is Ernesto Cortez in Texas. And one of the things that he would talk about is you need cold anger. And that's not that hot anger that's going to lash out, but rather channel that anger into something cold, that feeling that you want to make a change. And then with that anger, make a change. A wonderful pastor that I worked with in New York, I was in ministry in New York for over 30 years before being blessed to come here to Vermont, Johnny Ray Youngblood, would talk about African-American man, St. Paul's Community Baptist Church out in East New York, did a lot of community organizing in the housing projects out there against the drugs in the community. And the organizers that he was working with, he was always worried that he was going to come off as the angry black man. They said, no, that anger's good. That anger means, our English word anger comes from an old Norse word that means loss. You're feeling that loss, that loss of community, that loss of quality of life for your people. That anger, that's natural to be angry. But then what are you going to do
channel
with that anger?
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Channel it into this kind of action. That's what I – yeah, and Melissa can talk more about it. But you know, we don't just work on issues of homelessness. We work on issues of religious hate,
right.
How to channel that anger. How do we make sure that we take care of those who we often forget? We've done a lot of great work on corrections reform,
right.
Out of the cathedral, St. Paul's Cathedral in Burlington, and a number of other congregations in the Chittenden area. How do we take care of those who have violated some laws, need a time out, and yet are going to come back? They are
right.
Our brothers, our sisters, our daughters, our sons,
right.
Our mothers and fathers. How do we reintegrate back into and make sure that our corrections is doing the work that needs to be done? We're working now on some climate change issues, which is so important. These floods, you get a couple of 100-year floods every 10 years,
right.
Like, we need to do something about the climate.
Right.
And so Melissa, I'm sure, can tell much
yes,
more.
Yes, Melissa,
about this.
Do you want to fill us in on those areas?
I'll do the best that I can. Within VIA, the way that we choose our issues is by listening to the folks who are part of our network, a part of our organization. And corrections reform has been at the top of the list for a number of years. Right now, they were working with a couple of senators on a piece of legislation called Second Chance legislation,
mm-hmm.
And it didn't move anywhere. So we're going to come back at it again next year. But that piece of legislation looks at our neighbors, like what Earl said, our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and sons and daughters who have been incarcerated for decades. Maybe they had one of those nights, which we've all had, where you just make a really dumb decision and it ended up with them being in jail and incarcerated. And they ended up getting years of incarceration, not, 7 years and you're out, 12 years and you're out. We're talking folks who have been incarcerated since they were in their 20s, maybe even teens. And now they're looking at 60s and 70s and they've spent their entire year, entire life basically locked up. Being able to in Vermont have a chance of going through a rigorous, it's not just you've been incarcerated for a long time, we're going to let you out. But looking at everything that they've done since that time and having the judge take a look at their file and basically give them a second chance to live out the remainder of their life in dignity. And so that's one of the issues that our corrections group has been working on. We've been working on getting opioid prevention centers in some of our major locations that need it. Up in Burlington, our congregations that are up there, have seen a huge uptick in the number of needles and caps and folks. I have seen at our office, I would go to get lunch and I would come back and people would be shooting up right in front of our office up in Burlington.
Wow.
And my heart goes out for them because, it's a disease. Any addiction is a disease. And when people are at such a low point that they are willing to, in a public place, be shooting up because they can't deal with what they are going through at that time or because they have such a strong addiction and they aren't ready to break that yet, we need to, as a society, say, what do we need to do to make sure that you get the help that you need? And I think that overdose prevention centers and our leaders would agree after doing a lot of research on it, they have said that this is what our community needs at this time. So they've really been helping to get that through. We've worked for a number of years now. We helped with a campaign to get the proposal to amend passed a couple years ago, which was to amend our state constitution to abolish all slavery. And we've been working on racial justice, and now we've taken up climate action, and we're looking to figure out what sliver of climate action we want to be taking up. So yeah, a lot going on, more than just housing and homelessness.
Yeah, for sure. And you also have safety on your website. I work with a group called Campaign for Vermont, and we just did a survey, and it was one of the top five items that were on people's minds. And that shocked us, because this used to be one of the safest states in the nation. And I just had a request for somebody in town to do a public forum with our police on safety. And I thought, good grief, this is Vermont. What's happening? But people are afraid. And it's shocking to me. But you're seeing something.
It's interesting, because this is kind of coming out of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And as someone who grew up in a small town in South Florida and then moved to a bigger city and then ended up moving to Vermont, you know, what I have noticed with safety is, when you know your neighbors and you know folks in your community, you know the ones that make mischief, right? And then you work together as a community to help those individuals out. The pandemic put us all in isolation for a number of years. And when we've come back out, some of us don't know our neighbors, because some neighbors have moved on, some neighbors have come in, and I'm not sure if we as a community have really taken the time to get to know our neighbors. And so instead of entering into those relationships with, like, I trust you, and just think that you're a decent human being, you know, we get afraid. And it also, and that fear allows other folks to do things that they may not necessarily do if they knew who the people around them were. And, you know, so I think that we might have been seeing more of an uptick, because people thought they could do things in secret, and now they can't. And, you know, folks are afraid.
Yeah, Melissa, I'm going to ask Earl to jump in here. We've got about a minute, Earl.
Yeah, just very quickly. I think that's entirely right. And it's perception a lot of times. And Vermont is still a very safe state, but not as safe as it was in that perception. And that's actually good, because that will drive us to action. What I particularly like about Vermont Interfaith Action in our relation, our organizing model, is it's based on relationship. Doing the one-on-one visits, the listening, hearing what's going on, and it's building those relationships that builds our power to change things.
I just wanted to butt in a little bit. Two things that always bother me. One is, years ago, I participated in an exercise about if I was a inmate coming out into society, where I had to get a job and where I had to get housing and everything that you need to survive, I flunked. Just, it was very eye opening. I mean, I was like, there's no help. And Melissa said, yeah, people that have been in for 10, 15 years, you know, I forget what I did yesterday. So how do you come out after 10 or 15 years and know what to do? Everything's changed. And the same with kids who are in foster care. And the minute they age out, bam, they're on their own. How do you expect them to survive? That's just my two cents about corrections.
I think I was in that same exercise with you, the Greater Barrier Community.
That was awesome.
It was an eye-opening exercise. I think that, you know, I need to have more grace and compassion for folks around me. We don't know what people go through. We don't know what influences the decisions that they make. You know, and I think that one of the areas is, when it comes to folks that have been incarcerated, we tend to, as a society, put a stigma on them that they will forever be that. Really, what it is that they made a wrong decision, and they got caught, and they had to pay consequences, and now they have to come back into society. And like you said, if they've been removed from society, which I don't personally believe that's how we should treat people that make infractions on the law, but if they've been removed from society and are expected to now integrate, I mean, think of, like, what was it like when you went to go get a driver's license when you were 15, 16 years old?
Right.
I mean, for me, it was totally different than it is now. For sure. You know, and so how do you expect people to learn right. all of that?
Yeah, everything. It must have changed in 10, 15 years.
With that?
Yeah. You know, rules, legislation, mm-hmm. people.
Yeah.
Well, and I taught in a maximum security prison in New York State for 7 years, Sing Sing, notorious. And,
I live right next door to Sing
yeah,
Sing.
Yeah, notorious place. But one of the things, like, and, you know, I've dealt with people getting out of prison because a lot of times they'll come to church. It's the only thing they know that's right. the same. One guy told me, yeah, by the time he got out, there were cell phones. He'd never seen a cell phone. Had no idea. You know, when he went in, you know, phones were, you know, had cords
right.
and you dials and, the whole thing. And he's like, what is happening? What
right.
do I do?
Didn't you expect them to survive?
Yeah, another guy hadn't crossed a street. You know, and he was in for like 25 years.
Oh, my God.
Hadn't crossed the street.
Yeah.
And he was just petrified. Couldn't figure out, like, how to look both ways. Yeah, because, you forget. You know, for 25 years, he hadn't crossed the street. And one of the things that, and people, and then they just haven't been given the coping skills, haven't been given the education. I mean, the old joke is, we should put a revolving door on the front of prisons because, two out of three inmates are back in within 3 years.
Right.
One of the things, though, that got me to working in prisons was finding out that literally that recidivism rate drops to 95 or less than 5% if a prisoner has access to education. These guys aren't stupid. Yeah. They just haven't been educated.
Right.
And so – that's why I taught there. And, that's part of, just a small part. We're physical beings. We're emotional beings. We're intellectual beings. And we're spiritual beings. And we need to have all those parts, moving, autonomous, developing. And, if we do that while guys are in prison, quite frankly, then they can come out and be fully functioning human beings.
Right.
But if they're stunted with no education, stunted with, all the emotional difficulties, sometimes physical disabilities, and this is where, our faith comes into it, not no sense of their spiritual life.
Right.
How do we, a person couldn't, live in society like that anyway, and we're expecting, somebody who's been, for 25 years, not even able to cross street to function.
That is that is scary.
It is. And so that's why our corrections reform is so important.
Yeah.
That's why the work we go ahead, Melissa. Sorry. I'm a preacher and I can go on and on.
We know that. That's good.
What I was going to add to that is, this is why I believe so much in the work that we do as Vermont Interfaith Action. We're about changing systems, and system change is hard. It's scary. Sometimes it takes a long time because, we're creatures of habit. We feel secure when things are the same around us. But what happens is that we all can't understand everything around us as we're creating these systems, and then things change. And we need to make sure that the systems that we have in place are working for all of us, not just for the majority of people. So whether it is housing, whether it is corrections, whether it is, how we handle the environment and the earth that we have been entrusted to take care of, are the systems working for everyone? And if not, what do we need to do to change these systems, to tweak the systems, to maybe throw out the whole system and replace it with a new system, in order to make sure that we all have access to a life that is full of purpose and worth living.
And then interspersed with all of this, Melissa, I think is mental health, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a huge issue here in Vermont, and you're talking correct. A lot of people in corrections are there because they're dealing with mental health, and
I think a lot of us are dealing with mental health issues. We need better access.
Right.
I mean, we need better access. My grandfather was the president of NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness, down in Florida for a number of years, And, you know, we need to have better access to mental health. That is part – mental health is just as important as your dental health, as your vision, as your primary care. We need the whole package.
Yep, yeah, I couldn't agree more. It is pretty amazing. I think that goes along with the hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health and hatred, I think, go in the same basket.
Well, that's it. That's where I think the for example, the work we did on the campaign to abolish slavery in Vermont.
Right.
I mean, on the one hand, very symbolic. Yeah, and it was about taking 36 words out of the Constitution. But what that did was engender a lot of conversations where we could talk to people, where we could listen to people,
right,
and hear about, what does that mean about the history of slavery? What does that mean about the history of race,
right,
racial oppression? And how can we then work for racial healing? And that's a way that I think we really come to a much better understanding of ourselves, of our neighbors, and ultimately our community mental health becomes a much saner sort of thing rather than dealing with the insanity that we've had.
And dealing within that mixture of all the things you just talked about, we also have a lot of trafficking here in Vermont, big time. And I don't think people realize that at all. I did a TV show on trafficking by a woman who was here trying to stop legalizing prostitution here in Vermont. And what she had to say blew my mind here in Vermont. Just amazing what's happening. You don't even know it. I live in a cocoon, I swear.
Yeah.
Well, we're a border state. I mean, I grew up in Florida, so trafficking is I actually took a couple of courses on how we track trafficking and whatnot when I was living in Florida. But you know, Vermont being a border state, it's really easy.
Right.
It's one of those places that it's easy to get folks coming in and out. And, that is not an issue that has ever come up.
Oh, sorry.
In our congregation at Vermont Interfaith Action. But
well, I know somebody who, it's a long story, but she lived in New Hampshire and right next to her house right next to her were kids in cages.
Yeah.
And one night they woke up and there's lights everywhere, you know, the circling lights of red. And she went out and they're taking this couple, their neighbors and these children. And she just jumped in on the issue and became very vocal about it all over New England. And because it's right next door.
Vulnerable places, when people are in vulnerable places, whether it's, trying to make a better life for yourself and thinking that a ticket to America will get you there,
exactly,
or whether it's kids who don't have parents that are looking out for them for whatever reason, whether their parents have addiction problems or incarcerated or, unhoused, like all of those issues impact the quality of life that people can have. And when you're in a vulnerable place, it's really easy to be taken advantage of by people who are not right and are taking advantage of folks in that way. So,
and I noticed also, Melissa, awesome. You've got the cost of living and the economy on your website. How are you focusing on that? Because Earl and I were just talking at the break. This drives me crazy. 1 out of 5 Vermonters deal with food insufficiency in an agricultural state. What is
that? Yes.
Unbelievable to me.
Well, we've looked at it for a number of years. Our clergy folks were dealing with a moral economy. How do we have an economy that reflects our values and reflects our morals? Like, we are the ones that get to choose what our economy looks like. And so we have to decide, what are our values? Are our values that, hey, it's every person for themselves and, good luck making sure that you have enough money to put food on your table? Or is it, hey, we need to make sure that all of us have access to adequate amounts of food to feed us, to feed our families.
Right.
And so what are the changes in our policies that we need to do to get there? Can you afford to be paying people the federal minimum wage, or do we need a minimum wage that is actually a livable wage in order to make to ensure that all of our neighbors have enough food on the table?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And within our Clergy and Elders Caucus, we've had a lot of talk that you know, in our moral economy document, really understanding that, you know, how we use our money shows what our values are. Yeah, very, very clearly where we put our money. That also
we like to say a budget is a moral document, right?
Exactly. Very
I
much
like
so.
That.
Yeah, and it really is. It shows, you know, this is what you value,
right?
Because this is
right.
where you put the money. Yeah, as Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, you hear preachers say all the time, you know, where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. Jesus didn't say it that way. He said, where your money is, that's where your heart is. And yep. so that's why it's important. Where is it that we put our money? And that's even brought up, believe it or not, taxes. And Jesus talked about that, too.
Oh, right? Yes, for sure. Throwing out those tax collectors.
Exactly. And so part of it is, you know, we're talking the movement in the legislature, possibly do a wealth tax. You know, personally, sort of looking at my understanding of our Christian values, it's not a bad thing. And I am blessed with a child who's making that kind of money, and
excellent.
I talked to her about
good.
It. Yeah, yeah, thank good God, for her, good yeah. for her and everything. And she says, "No, I got to pay my fair share."
Yeah,
And Ben and Jerry's, both of them come out right. and said, "That's
right,"
and. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of discussion, but I think that's something that we need to seriously talk about, because where our money is right. will show what it is yeah. that we really value. Yeah. And we are the state of Bernie Sanders, and he'll go on and on about the millionaires and the billionaires.
He doesn't
or whatever,
talk about but, millionaires anymore.
Well, there you
just
go.
Just billionaires.
But I do think when we look at the some of the wealth inequalities
right.
throughout our nation, and even here in Vermont, we're
right.
not as bad as we are nationally. But how do we make sure that people aren't being left behind? How do we make sure that those that got enough, if they give a little bit more, that can help?
There was another forum they had, or I forget what they called it. It was about food insufficiency, where we were brought into three different groups: poor, middle class, and rich. And it was amazing at the end of the day that the rich didn't help anybody, but the middle class helped the poor. It was, I don't know if any of you ever went to the, I forget it, it was, they did it all over Vermont for a long time. And I thought it should be done in schools and in every Rotary. And I mean, just, it was amazing how when they, they set up a scenario, and the middle class would help the poor, and the rich would, put tablecloths on their tables. I mean, it was
Pat. Part of running a nonprofit is having to fundraise, right? Like that's how we exist. We
right.
don't have products and services that we sell. It's based on people donating, whether it be foundations, charities, congregations, individuals. And one of my jobs as deputy director has been to understand individual fundraising. I've been a fundraiser for, oh gosh, I'm not even going to tell you how long now, decades. And studies have shown that your average giver is actually middle class to poor.
Right.
When it comes to charity, when it comes to giving of money, donations, the average giver, the average gift to nonprofits is less than $50, and the average giver is poor to middle class. And the reason that is, and I'm a firm believer of this, is that those that have had to live paycheck to paycheck or with very little money, they understand what it's like to be in need. And so when they have money, they are much more willing to give
right.
in order to help others out, because they wish that somebody had done that for them.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting, but it's not unusual, and studies back it up that's who usually ends up giving.
Yeah. Yeah. My experience working, for decades in Harlem, in the South Bronx, in New York City, working in Barry, which is not a rich community,
for sure.
which has 25% poverty
right.
rate, is that, when people don't have, they're still willing to give
yep,
and
right.
share, because exactly like Melissa said, they know that could be them tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
And,
exactly.
Yeah, and I think that is really just so important. That is, again, something that ties into our religious values, so that this congregational, relationally based organizing really comes out of life, comes out of our experience. And that's why it can be so effective in making change. Like Melissa says, yeah, it can take time. And it can take a lot of work. But this is really what we're called to do. This is what can make a difference in people's lives. And quite frankly, feeds us as well. I mean,
makes you feel good when you go home at night.
Yeah, and yeah, you can sleep well because first of all, your dog's tired.
Exactly.
But second of all, you know you're doing what God's calling you to do.
Right.
You know you're doing what it is that will help someone else in need. And you know, like, if that's me tomorrow, somebody's going to be there for me.
Right.
You got hope.
This is a great state for that. I'm as mad as I get sometimes about the politics and stuff. Which I do because it's in my blood. But then something happens like the flood.
Yep.
They're there. Everybody's there.
Well, you were there. Melissa was there.
I was there for 10 minutes. I couldn't pick up that mud.
I seen this woman with a shovel in her hand filling up buckets full of mud. And she's a mean one with a power washer.
I am. We went to help somebody in church and had mud.
Oh, it was awful.
And what area gets hit the hardest in Barrie?
Yeah,
I mean, the North End.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Melissa.
I was going to say, part of it, too, I mean, this goes back to the organizing work and the politics of it all, is that, the less desirable areas, that is to develop, that is where the poorer people are going to end up being.
Right.
And so, it's not surprising that the area in Barrie that got flooded was the area where the lower income housing was at, because that's the less desirable area to live in. And it's what we were talking about just a few minutes ago about how people give money, and who it is that gives money. This right here is one of the reasons why VIA does the work that we do, because we are the voice for people who are on the margins.
Yep.
I know a lot of our legislators. They're good-hearted people. In Vermont, I don't think that you definitely don't go into the politics for the money. You might go in for like having some power. But for the most part, I honestly believe that the folks that we have serving in office, they're doing so because they really do want to help out their community.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening though is that because of the way that we are structured, most of our legislators are well-to-do. Not all, but most of them are. And sometimes we only know what our viewpoint is, right? Like it's hard for us to say, oh, well, I can look at things in 20 different ways because I can take on the understanding of 20 different people. So they can only see the laws and the bills that are coming before them through their own lens. And they sometimes can't understand what it would be like to be someone who's impoverished because that's not them. And so part of the work that we can do is we bring the stories of your everyday Vermonters to the legislators to say, hey, listen, great idea on this bill. We might not be going at it the best way. Let me have a few folks share a story with you so that you can maybe understand it better so that we can try to craft this bill in the best possible way.
Good for you.
And, I think that it's important for all legislators to have that. And I'm happy that Vermont Interfaith Action is able to build those relationships to bring those stories to the State House.
You should bring up some folks to tell the story about the economy because I'm thinking this property tax deal this year.
Oh yeah.
I know they're working on something, but give me a break, people.
Yep. Yep.
There's
plenty of work for us to do.
We're out
of time here, I know now, but we're going to keep doing the work. I got to run out of here now because another meeting to do this work. But thank you, Pat.
You're welcome.
And
thank
Vermont
you
Viewpoints.
Very much.
Thank you, Melissa. And thank you to all your listeners.
Yeah, thank you.
This is what gives me hope that we can talk
and
about this.
Our
and
listeners
make it
are paying attention, that's for sure, because I get a lot of emails afterwards. If it's a good show, maybe if not, but this is was a great conversation. So thank you both.
Yeah.
This is Pat McDonald.
Thank you so much.
Yep. See you Sunday.
Amen.
This is Pat McDonald, your host for Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. See you next Thursday.